What the government needs now is stability and continuity. What China fears the most is a flip-flop of policies.
Presidential term limits, one of many issues as China's top leadership meets. It's Tuesday, March 6th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, South Korea sends diplomatic delegation to the North. A U.S. aircraft carrier visits Vietnam. Young Chinese, often misunderstood. Powering up local food, the Oscars. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China has kicked off annual meetings of its top legislature. During this year's gathering of the National People's Congress, delegates are expected to pass a proposal that could allow Xi Jinping to become China's president for life. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide has more.
Arriving in fleets of buses and marching in line, more than 2,000 delegates gathered at the Great Hall of the People for the legislature's opening session. Premier Li Keqiang's government work report carried familiar pledges to limit financial risk posed by mounting local government debt and to keep China's growth stable. Li also pledged to further open up China's markets for foreign investment. And just as Washington readies to slap stiff tariffs on steel and aluminum, China pledged to cut its overcapacity in steel by 170 million tons.
China will unswervingly promote the globalization of the free economy and protect free trade. We are ready to work with all relevant parties to advance multilateral trade negotiations.
Li says this year China will spend 8.1% more on defense and that China's communist-led government expects the economy to expand by 6.5%. Li did not mention the proposed constitutional amendments in his report, but another speech at the opening session did, revealing for the first time that the push to pass some 21 amendments, including the article on Xi's term in office, began in September of last year. The party says the proposal to scrap the two-term limit on the president's time in office was a response to calls from across the country and party cadres. Although some delegates VOA spoke with were unaware of the proposal, all voiced support for the move and confidence the party would address concerns about Xi becoming president for life.
That question will eventually be resolved appropriately. But what the government needs now is stability and continuity. What China fears the most is a flip-flop of policies.
I believe that the Communist Party of China will not revert to its old past and create a personality cult. Regulations in the party constitution are clear on that.
I'm sure the party has taken this into consideration and has made plans.
Delegates to the Congress will discuss proposed amendments on Wednesday, and a final vote will be held this coming Sunday. The vote, party officials say, will include booths, ballot boxes, and even a backup if the counting system fails. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. China targets robust growth as Xi bids to rule indefinitely. Taiwan, visits by U.S. officials could become more common and strategic. Protests rock Kashmir after deadly shooting by Indian troops. Seoul says North Korea's Kim Jong-un meets with South Korean officials. Cambodian leader rejects call for talks from opposition. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll also find them on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A 10-member South Korean delegation is in North Korea for 2 days of talks with the intention of discussing nuclear disarmament, a permanent peace on the Korean Peninsula, and eventual North Korean-U.S. talks. The delegation, led by the National Security Office chief, met with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un during a dinner late Monday.
평창 동계올림픽을 계기로 조성된
Before leaving Seoul, National Security Chief Chung Yi-young said the delegation will deliver President Moon Jae-in's wish to bring about denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and permanent peace by extending the goodwill and better inter-Korean relations created by the Winter Olympics. Tufts University Associate Professor of Korean Studies Sung-yoon Lee tells VOA's Victor Beatty the crucial personality to watch in the delegation is South Korean Intelligence Chief Seo-hoon.
Mr. Seo has been deeply involved in two previous inter-Korean summit meetings in 2000 and 2007, respectively, and he is also charged, I fully believe, with the mission of trying to arrange for schedule another inter-Korean summit later this year.
North Korea on Saturday said it's willing to talk to the U.S., but said it would never sit with any precondition, and they also warned that they would counter the U.S. if joint military drills go forward.
That's right, and for North Korea to issue this statement that they will never even have denuclearization as a precondition for any kind of meeting with the United States, it shows that North Korea wants to be treated as a de facto nuclear state. It also more ominously shows that the acceptance of North Korea as a de facto nuclear state is almost a fait accompli. That is, we have, the United States and the international community have really lowered the bar in dialogue with North Korea from the good old days of CVID, so-called, an outdated acronym, which stands for Complete, Verifiable, Irreversible Dismantlement of North Korea's Nuclear Program, to now freeze for a freeze. If North Korea doesn't conduct a nuclear or an ICBM test for the next few months, thank God, we're very happy. So we see that North Korea has exerted its will on the United States and the rest of the world. North Korea is on the verge of nuclear breakout, and the United States is tacitly accepting that, while South Korea is now trying to set up its own agenda, advance its own agenda by setting up an inter-Korean summit. And I expect, coming out of this visit, an announcement of a schedule for yet another round of hello and goodbye forever, the highly staged, chaperoned, temporary inter-Korean meetings between separated families. So every time North Korea and South Korea meet, there is money flow from Seoul to Pyongyang, and that will be another hidden agenda. How much North Korea wants for these inter-Korean projects to resume and for the inter-Korean summit to take place in Pyongyang later this year.
Sung-yoon Lee said in the long term, dropping the presidential term limit in China will have profound implications for Asian security. He expects keeping Xi Jinping as leader indefinitely means a more assertive Chinese policy aimed at South Korea and a more confrontational approach toward the United States regarding North Korea and its maritime claims in the South China Sea. Happening now in Asia, China signaled that it intends to harden its stance on the dissent in Taiwan and Hong Kong, where tensions are rising under the authoritarian government of President Xi Jinping. China's top leadership is currently holding its annual meetings in Beijing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. For the first time since the Vietnam War, a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier is paying a visit to a Vietnamese port, seeking to bolster both countries' efforts to stem expansionism by China in the South China Sea. VOA Asia's Ira Melman reports.
Monday's visit by the USS Carl Vinson brought more than 5,000 crew members to the central coastal city of Da Nang, the largest such U.S. military presence in Vietnam since the Southeast Asian nation was unified under communist leadership after the war ended in 1975. The arrival of the Carl Vinson, accompanied by a cruiser and a destroyer, comes as China increases its military buildup in the Paracel Islands and seven artificial islands in the Spratlys in maritime territory also claimed by Vietnam. China claims most of the South China Sea and has challenged traditional U.S. naval supremacy in the Western Pacific. The U.S. ambassador to Vietnam, Daniel Crittenbrink, praised the carrier visit.
I think the visit by the USS Carl Vinson demonstrates our commitment to the U.S.-Vietnam partnership, and it also demonstrates the dramatic progress that we've made in our bilateral relationship in recent years. I also think the visit demonstrates America's firm commitment to the Indo-Pacific region. And as far as the specific common interests that will advance, the United States and Vietnam share a range of interests, including a desire to maintain peace, prosperity, unimpeded commerce, freedom of navigation, upon which the region and its economies depend.
The U.S. Navy has staged activities in Vietnam for its Pacific Partnership humanitarian and civic missions in 9 of the past 12 years. Joseph Cheng, a political analyst at the City University of Hong Kong, said during an interview in a very noisy park that the visit of the Vinson does indicate the positions Vietnam and the United States now hold on the world stage.
It certainly means that the bilateral relationship has been completely normalized. The United States now is a very important trading partner of Vietnam, and it is the most important destination of Vietnam's exports. In terms of security, both countries certainly share substantial common interests in the containment of China in view of the territorial dispute between China and Vietnam. However, it seems that Vietnam does not intend to become an ally of the United States. It is basically a kind of hedging strategy, a kind of balance of power strategy.
What will China's reaction be to the visit of the U.S. carrier? Cheng says most likely not much.
There is some irritation, of course, but Chinese leaders tend to look at the broader picture. The leadership is very concerned with the increasing tension between China and the United States, as the Donald Trump administration now treats China as a rival and is more concerned with the rise of China and intends to exert further pressure on China, both in the security field and also in the economic field.
The United States normalized relations with Vietnam in 1995 and lifted an arms embargo in 2016, and the two former adversaries have steadily improved relations in all areas, including trade, investment, and security. Ira Melman, VOA Asia.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia: Myanmar citizens marched through Yangon Monday to protest against a law under discussion in parliament that would limit free speech. The initial proposal was met with international approval, but new changes recently discussed have changed opinions. Visit VOA 60 online for this and the day's other top stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, millennials around the world are asserting their presence in many ways. Some are designing apps. Others protest in the streets. And China, home to the largest number of the world's millennials, is undergoing tectonic shifts as hundreds of millions of youth came of age in the 21st century. Zach Deichwald, a young Columbia graduate, spent 4 years in China to work and study. During his stay, Zach learned a great deal about Chinese millennials by living and hanging out with them. And then he wrote about his experience in a book titled Young China: How the Restless Generation Will Change Their Country and the World, which was published in February. VOA Asia intern Harry Chen spoke with Zach about why he wrote this book.
I chose to write it because I felt like the China that was being described to me was vastly different than the China I was experiencing for myself. When I would hear how China was being described in the media, like I just mentioned, and even reverberating off of my friends and family who had traveled to China maybe for a week or two on business or for fun, it was a scary China. It was an inaccessible China. And the more time I spent there, particularly with the young generation in China, I realized that the way we looked at China and Chinese people was from macro point of view, either or large sort of scary quote unquote communist politics. And then on top of that, you'd get the really sensationalist articles, sort of like the organ stealing prostitutes idea, which is, you know, Chinese people are all eating dog meat at dog meat festivals, or they're driving Lamborghinis through Shanghai. They are living in ghost towns, or they're being shoved onto subways due to overpopulations. It's a conflicting, confusing, and kind of the scary view of China. It felt like a focus on the sensationalist. I wanted to focus on the ordinary stories, particularly emerging with this young generation.
You definitely went against popular narratives. You know, a lot of books talking about the little emperors and the exam robots. You wrote about Chinese millennials as a generation that is much more human and motivated. So why do you think the conventional depictions have gotten them so wrong? And how did you unmask something closer to truth yourself?
Well, it's easier to imagine an entire generation of single children as being spoiled. China is one of the biggest problems that they face is the 4-2-1 problem. There are four grandparents for every two parents for every one child. So we imagine that working as a funnel. It's sort of an upside down demographic pyramid, funneling attention, love, extra food. And so these single children are inevitably going to be spoiled rotten. I think in the 1990s, they referred to it as a psychological ticking time bomb. But when you actually talk to these young people, or I have some stories in the book, it's so clear that all of that attention, all of that extra focus translates more into pressure.
Based on all your experiences, your time spending with the millennials, can you just name a few, you know, big things that you would say that, gosh, I know American millennials will be so different in this regard?
First is scale, because when you think about economic, political, and then cultural impact, the size of this young generation in China, if you count millennials, so Ba Ling Ho and Jiu Ling Ho, so the post-80s and post-90s put together, which is the same more or less as American millennials, there are 400 million in China. And there's only 80 million millennials in the United States. So there's more millennials in China than there are people in the United States and Canada combined. The next part, and you touched on this, is pressure. Like I said, this young generation has grown up having to be more competitive and pressurized than we can even really begin to understand.
Zach Deichwald is author of Young China. He was speaking with VOA Asia intern Harry Chen. And you can see more of that interview on Facebook at VOA Asia. Zach recently founded Young China Group. It's a think tank that explores trends and implications of Chinese millennials. This news alert from VOA Asia, a United States aircraft carrier, is visiting Vietnam for the first time since the end of the war nearly 40 years ago in an attempt to bolster the developing friendship between the two nations. The USS Carl Vinson is making port in the central coastal city of Da Nang with about 5,000 crew members. Make your daily port of call online at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, around the world, one in three people suffer from something known as hidden hunger. Their bellies may be full, but the food that they're eating is not nutritious. Michelle Quinn reports a San Francisco food technology firm is working in Liberia to see if it can make a popular Liberian dish more nutritious.
This is called power gari. Gari is also the Liberian name for cassava. Like an amazing cream of wheat, the texture, the mouthfeel of this cassava from the farm is just perfect.
Thomas Bowman has worked as a chef at award-winning restaurants. Now he's in San Francisco cooking up power gari, a mush made from the cassava plant and fortified with vitamins, minerals, and protein, and a sprinkle of cinnamon.
So this is something that they eat every single day there. And what we kind of have done is taken the product and kind of made a culturally relevant food better. So this power gari here has about 12 grams of protein per serving.
Bowman works for Just, a San Francisco tech food company that makes mayonnaise, cookies, and other foods more nutritious by adding high-tech, plant-based ingredients. In January, the company began selling power gari in Liberia. Its vision is to fix world malnutrition by offering local foods that taste good and provide vitamins, minerals, and protein. More than 30% of Liberians suffer from poor nutrition,
sometimes hard to get the exact flavor profile because, you know, the cassava or the sugar, whatever it may be, you know, that we're using, you know, in northern Liberia is different than what he can get access to here in the office.
Quinn brings ingredients from Liberia, where he lives, back to the San Francisco office, where they are tested and cooked. Liberians in the country make the final product, relying on mostly local ingredients. The goal, says company founder Josh Tetrick, is nothing less than solving the world's unjust food system.
We want to end micronutrient deficiency in the world. We're starting with Liberia, and the potential to do it, I think, quicker than a lot of people realize is right in front of us.
Just as bringing a Silicon Valley drive and know-how to solving one of the world's most vexing problems. And they are starting by selling a meal in Liberia that costs about 5 cents per serving. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
The fantasy film The Shape of Water earned 4 Oscars at the Academy Awards, which took place Sunday evening here in the United States, and perhaps you saw it on TV very early in the morning Monday. It included Best Picture as part of their winnings. The film brought Mexican director Guillermo del Toro the Oscar for Best Director, and it also won honors for its original score and production design. Mike O'Sullivan reports from Los Angeles that the theme of inclusion dominated the awards in a year when many in Hollywood have rallied behind women. Audio excerpts are courtesy of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Frances McDormand was named Best Actress for her role as a mother who was determined to shame a local sheriff into finding her daughter's killer in 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. As she accepted her Oscar, McDormand asked other women nominees to stand, including actress Meryl Streep.
Meryl, if you do it, everybody else will. Come on. The filmmakers, the producers, the directors, the writers, the cinematographer, the composers, the songwriters, the designers.
She said each of those women has stories to tell and projects that need financing. A recurring theme through the evening, allegations of sexual harassment and assault against a growing number of men in Hollywood. The movie mogul Harvey Weinstein, the subject of scores of accusations, was expelled from the Movie Academy in October. Many in the audience wore the black and white pins of the Time's Up movement, which provides legal help for women abused in the workplace. Others wore orange ribbons and pins to call attention to gun violence following the killings last month of 17 people at a Florida high school. Another theme of the evening, the transformative power of films. Accepting the Oscar for Best Director, filmmaker Del Toro said that films remove barriers.
Because I think that the greatest thing our art does and our industry does is to erase the lines in the sand. We should continue doing that when the world tells us to make them deeper.
Jordan Peele achieved a first for an African-American filmmaker as he accepted an Oscar for the original screenplay of Get Out, a genre-bending horror film about an interracial couple.
I thought it wasn't going to work. I thought no one would ever make this movie. But I kept coming back to it because I knew if someone let me make this movie, that people would hear it and people would see it. So I want to dedicate this to all the people who raised my voice.
Gary Oldman was named Best Actor for his role as Britain's wartime Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, in Darkest Hour, which also earned the Oscar for makeup. Another wartime epic, Dunkirk, won awards for film editing, sound editing, and mixing. Allison Janney was named Best Actress for the biographical film I, Tonya, in which she played the mother of controversial skater Tonya Harding. Sam Rockwell earned the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for his role as a racist policeman in 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri. Coco, a Pixar film set in Mexico, was named Best Animated Feature and also earned an Oscar for Original Song. A Chilean film about a transgender woman called A Fantastic Woman was named Best Foreign Language Film. Icarus, about the Russian doping scandal that led to Russia's ban from this year's South Korean Olympics, was named Best Documentary Feature. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program online at iTunes, SoundCloud, of course, on Facebook at VOA Asia, and our website, voanews.com, both of which you'll find our program streaming each and every day. Great place to listen. Another great place to listen is on the radio. If you happen to be in Tainan, Taiwan, check us out on the Voice of Chungrung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University. That, of course, is in Tainan, Taiwan. Thanks to everyone there who's listening. Our thanks go out to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Kelvin Fowler, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day.